If enough of us start moving our money in these ways, we can literally change what matters. We can change where the power is. We can change what the story is. Because at the end of the day, this is always all about money. And so I think there's just enormous potential for all of us, even though it may feel like our own little amount of money isn't doing much, it matters to someone. The fact that my money is in my local banks matters to those underserved people and those female entrepreneurs who are getting money to take their businesses forward in my community.
Welcome to the Healthy Love and Money podcast. If you find money to be the number one, two, or even third largest source of stress in your relationship, then you're in the right place. Going beyond how to budget, invest, and do your taxes, we're going to explore financial intimacy. Discover how to talk with your partner about your shared financial life. Let's take the awkward and painful out of money conversations. Join me and hit follow to listen to weekly inspiring, healing, and motivating interviews with financial therapists, couples therapists, and financial planners, and so many more. Let's go on the journey of financial intimacy together. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Healthy Love and Money podcast. Today, it's my distinct honor to welcome Janine Firpo to the show, co-founder of Invest for Better, Women Lead the Way. Janine and I had a chance to meet at a recent FinCon conference in New Orleans, 2023, and I was just struck with her energy and passion around investing and ethical investing and values-aligned investing. And so that's not something we talk a lot about on this podcast, but I know it's something that's so near and dear to many of the listeners is, how do I align how I'm investing my money? How do I do that? What's the best way to do it? What happens if I don't see it the same way as my partner in how we invest and align? So Janine has a powerful team behind her that she leads with the work that she's doing. She's dynamite. And so I just can't wait for this conversation. Janine, welcome to the show.
Hi, it's so great to be here. Thanks so much for having me. And what a great intro. I loved it.
Absolutely. Well, let's start off with this great question. Janine, when you were a little girl, did you dream that you would co-found a company called Invest for Better?
Absolutely not. When I was a little girl, actually at the age of three, I knew exactly what I was going to be in the world. I was going to be a doctor. And by the time I was nine, I knew that I was going to be a cardiovascular surgeon. And guess what? That is not what happened at all. I've had a very, very different career and only got into this whole financial space in terms of sharing it with others about 6 years ago. Although I've been an investor personally for probably 35.
Okay. So you've been a personal investor for 35 years, a good chunk of adult life, but really took this next step 6 years ago. So how has life changed for you? Because a part of the message for this podcast is we grow and change in our relationship with money and what we want to do with it. And, you know, I think people like you and I get to a point where it's like, we've really figured out some things and we've become passionate about sharing a message for other people. So can you take us a little bit on that journey psychologically of how things have changed for you?
Sure. So when I started investing, we're talking in the 1980s, I was investing in individual companies because that's what you did then. And as I grew older and things changed, the way that I invested changed. As my wealth grew, I wanted to do more than just invest in the stock market. But I think the most important thing for me really, oh, and I learned a lot from my mom. And my mom was all about invest in whatever makes the most return. She was driven by return because she grew out of, came out of the Depression and money was a big deal for her. So she was driven by that. And I would say to her, Mom, you're investing in things that are kind of really bad for the world. And she's like, I don't care. I'm going for return, which is a very typical kind of thing and way to think, right? Right. So I had my early career, about 14 or 15 years of it was in the high tech sector in the Silicon Valley. And in the mid 90s, I was a big traveler all the time. So I dropped out of a job. I quit a job and I did a 4.5 month, 5 month solo backpacking trip through sub-Saharan Africa. And while I was doing that, I saw poverty like I had never seen it before. And I decided on that trip that I was going to figure out a way to change my career so that I could work on solving poverty and work on some of the big social problems that I saw around the world. And that's what I did. I crafted sort of from scratch, a second career that lasted over 20 years using technology and looking at how technology could solve poverty. And I got somewhat involved in finance in that world. But what really happened for me is I also got very involved in conversations that were starting in the Bay Area around what's become known as impact investing. How do you invest your money in a way that gives you great, solid financial return at the same time that you're getting a good, positive impact on society? And at that time, it was basically that kind of investing was for people who were extremely wealthy or for foundations or big institutional investors. It was not for people like me. But I'd made these huge changes in my career. I had taken pay cuts to do work that mattered and to do work that aligned with my values. And I decided I'm going to figure out how to do this with my own money, even though I'm not super rich. And so I set out on that journey over 15 years ago, using financial advisors to help me. They didn't get me where I wanted to be. And so when I retired from my paying careers 6 years ago, I took my money back and started figuring this out for myself.
Wow. So it really has come out of, I mean, so many profound experiences, backpacking across the sub-Saharan Africa and seeing poverty like you'd never seen. And that trickle through to now, what you're trying to do, but also realizing broadly our industry, our financial planning advising industry is still very much on profit maximization as the driving kind of force. And how do we invest that way? It's less eye towards the impact side of how does where we allocate our money actually have a real impact? And so that's really the conversation that we're having today is what's happening in impact investing? How do people do that? How do families and couples do that? And, you know, Jeanine, if you're comfortable, I'd love to know, you're married as well. So your husband's been along this ride with you. How have you two navigated the changing relationship and understanding of the meaning of money?
So interestingly, he has not. So I got married for the first and only time.
Okay.
I'm still married when I was almost 48 years old.
Okay.
And when before he even proposed to me, my husband said, you know, if you ever get married, you should have a prenuptial agreement. And so we did. So we actually have completely separate money. So my money is my money and his money is his money, which I am finding a lot of younger couples are starting to do. We have very separate pools of money, which is great when it comes to spending and choice. And it's also great when it comes to investment. And I'm happy to say that I am having some influence on him and he's starting to do more of this with his money.
Okay.
But I don't need his approval on anything I do, which is an incredibly freeing place to be.
Can we talk about that for just a moment? Even the women's autonomy with money, because that's something I see in my practice a lot is there's a lot of men that are still in very traditional roles where they think that they need to be influencing the whole household financial outcomes, and the women have been disincluded in the conversations of beyond any day-to-day spending. They're really not involved in the investment management side of things. And so, you know, you work with a lot of women. How are you helping them kind of continue to take an empowered position around not just seeing their responsibility as day-to-day spending management or credit management, but really about investing and leading family wealth?
It's a great question. And you're absolutely right. Traditionally, women have really been sidelined. And a lot of women even talk about being like the breadwinner in the family. I'm kidding you not. Being the breadwinner in the family, going to see the financial advisor with the husband, and the financial advisor speaks to the husband, doesn't even look at the woman, even though she is like the one who's bringing in most of the money. So what is happening is there's a tremendous shift of financial assets to women in this country, both because they're starting to have more positions of power, but also because baby boomers, the husbands are passing away, money is shifting to women, and women are actually going to control a majority of the money in this country by 2030, which at this point is just 6 short years away. So one of the things that I do is I co-founded a nonprofit called Invest for Better a couple of years ago, and we are actually putting women into investment clubs to teach them how to step into their financial power, to teach them how to be confident around investing, to know the right kinds of questions to ask, to figure out how to do it themselves if they want, but not only how to be smart investors, but how to make decisions with their money that actually is also creating a more sustainable and socially responsible economic model. So we're teaching them both how to be confident investors and also how to be aligned with their values and their investment choices.
Yeah. Wow. That's so powerful. I mean, I think as enlightened as I like to think I am, Janine, I continue to be amazed at how little I actually understand this dynamic. And I'm just so honored to continue to explore and open up and broaden my horizon. And hopefully from the male side, I don't love things being gendered based, but like gender is a part of our identity. It's the way we see the world. It's the way we get socialized. So it shapes and influences how we see things. What's the message that you would want men to know about women investing?
So a couple of things. So first of all, you know, one of the things that's great about men is they really love women. And so you guys can be great advocates for us. And you can also, when you think about, you know, taking care of your family and providing that financial security, you really need to think about what happens to your wife if something happens to you. And she knows nothing about any of this stuff, right?
Right.
I have met women like that whose husbands pass away suddenly or something else happens. And all of a sudden they are left holding this financial bag that they are absolutely terrified of and don't know who to trust or how to go forward. So as some of your thinking about how do I create financial security for my family, having your wife be smart financially is a really, really important part of that. The other thing that I think is important to realize and recognize is that although women invest differently than men, a lot of studies have shown, including one that was a 10-year study of 5 million accounts by Fidelity, shows that women outperform men when they invest. So don't underestimate your wife or the women in your life in terms of their ability around this. They may feel like they don't want to take risks. They just want to be aware of the risk that they're taking before they take the risk. So they may take a little longer to figure out what they're going to do. They don't pull the trigger quite as fast as men. They don't trade as much as men. They tend to invest for the longer term. And those things pay off somewhere between 40 basis points to 1% a year, which is significant over the long term.
Wow. That's huge. I was aware of that, but I'm aware of that, but I'm glad to have it brought up and to talk about the female advantage in investing. And there's a number of factors that position women to be great long-term investors. And that's really, you know, the view that I feel fortunate to have learned having worked at Vanguard many years ago is about what it means to be a long-term investor, to buy and hold things. You know, and you know, okay, there's some counter arguments and a few other adjustments now that I would make, but by and large, when you look at the research, the academic research and the institutional research, it says be long-term focused. Mm-hmm. But there's something that we were talking about just before we hit record about even that be long-term focused, but where do you put your money? So can you talk about the investment funds that you're kind of tracking and talking about versus those most commonly touted as like, this is the index or this is the fund to follow from a passive long-term right. perspective and what you're seeing there?
Sure. But before I do that, I just want to mention when I talk about this kind of investing, so it's really important to recognize, I think a lot of times when people talk about investing, particularly non-accredited investors who don't have $1 million in net worth, excluding their home, non-accredited investors go straight to the stock market. When they think about investing, it's all about the stock market, right? When you talk about accredited investors or people who have larger amounts of money, they tend to talk all about private investing in real estate. That's where a lot of their money goes. Interestingly enough, high net wealth people do not invest as much in the stock market as non-accredited investors do. So when I'm talking about investing my values, I am talking about every single dime I have. I start with where do I bank? What am I doing with my fixed income? Where's my stock? What am I doing in the private arena? Because I do have some private investments. And what am I doing with real estate? So I am thinking across the entire spectrum of my portfolio and how do I move all of that money in alignment with my values. Since most of your listeners are probably focused on the stock market, let's talk about that. So there are many ways within the stock market that you can invest your values. You can either do it through broad-based holdings like a VTSA. Like one of the stocks I know that's very popular among the FinCon community is VTSAX. Mm-hmm. Large cap, broad market, Vanguard, low fee fund, right?
Right.
It is full of oil and gas. It is full of industrial prisons. It is full of tobacco. It's full of all kinds of things that many people may not want to be invested in. The belief, unfortunately, and a lot of the material that you see and read about suggests that investing in something that's more values aligned at a broad market level will be an underperformer. This is not actually true. In fact, there are many, many, many studies that show that when you invest in a way that's more values aligned, you're investing for environmental awareness, you're investing for diversity of boards, you're investing for worker compensation and fairness and equity, you're investing for things that guarantee that the company is being governed in an ethical way. When you're investing that way, you actually can meet or beat non-values aligned kinds of investments. And I'm going to use VTSAX as an example. So I just said that that is full of all kinds of stuff that you probably don't want to be invested in. I just looked up how they did in 2023. Mm-hmm. VTSAX did really good. They were up 26%. That would make anybody happy, right?
Right.
I own some VTSAX. It's a legacy investment for me. Yeah. I also started getting rid of it and buying another Vanguard, also large cap, broad market, Russell 1000 fund, very similar to VTSAX, also super low fee, but that does better, not perfectly, but that's better in terms of all of the things that I talked about. Hmm. 2023, that fund returned 30.8%. So it outperformed VTSAX by 4%, and it's better for all the things I care about. So let me ask you, why would anyone not be investing in that instead of VTSAX? And if you look at it over a longer term, there was, I think last year it underperformed a bit because oil and gas went crazy because of the Ukraine war. But over the longer term, it has been outperforming. And it outperformed last year.
Well, I think that you bring such an important principle in my mind is 1 year, outperform, underperform, okay. But when we look at 5-10 year projections, and when we look at what's the data saying about what we need as a society, kind of playing back on some of your mom's, you know, core messages, just invest for the highest return. Well, one, in any 1 year, we don't know what's going to be the highest return. We just don't. Like, people pontificate and say, this is going to be the place. This is the asset class that's going to have the highest return. Nobody knows. Nobody gets it right 100% of the time. That's the diversification part. But also that values based over the long run is better for the environment. And, you know, I don't mean to be extreme, but if we don't get our capital investment aligned correctly, we're not going to have a planet to live on. At least as I'm understanding some of the climate scientists, we're hitting and getting closer and closer to tipping points that are non-reversible. So how we allocate capital does matter. And it's not the funnest thing for non-investment nerds to think through, but you know, we've got to be serious and really thinking about how we allocate capital as a society. And that's why this conversation is so important to me as I really come back.
You're right on. To think that what's going on in the world in terms of women empowerment, other social issues, racial issues, what's going on in terms of the environment, what's going on around what consumers expect. I mean, if you think those things do not have an impact on the bottom line of companies, you're crazy. They absolutely do. I mean, look at the insurance industry. I mean, we have insurance companies. I live in the state of California. We have insurance companies that have pulled out of this state because of the fire risk. These realities of what's going on environmentally are having major impacts on companies. And if you're not building an awareness of that into your fundamentals around your decisions of investing, I think you're really going to miss the boat. And I think that's only going to accelerate in the future. The other thing that I think is really important to know, and this goes back to the stock market and what you just said about we need to invest in, we not only need to divest, I guess is the word I'm searching for. We not only need to divest what are doing bad, we need to invest in things that are doing well. So in the same way that you can make decisions with broad-based market funds like an ESGV, you can also find ETFs in the stock market that are more vertical. So you can invest, for example, in funds, ETFs that are all solar companies or that are renewable energy or that are clean water or that are affordable housing or that, I mean, the thing that's really fascinating about the world of ETFs is there's an ETF for almost everything. And there are they exist for things that are more sustainable, more values aligned. There are ETFs that are focused on women that only invest in female CEOs. So if you're a woman like me and you're interested in uplifting other women and helping them succeed, you can invest there. So there are a lot of ways that even within the stock market, you can pick these vertical ETFs to invest in things that matter to you. You know, you don't want to put every egg in those baskets because right. They're going to be a lot more volatile, but it's not bad to have some money in those kinds of things.
Thank you for listening to the Healthy Love and Money podcast. I want to take a moment to invite you into a deeper conversation about you, your loved ones, and money. Seeing couples talk more openly with each other around money is so amazing to me. Eye contact, gentle touch of hands, a relaxing in the shoulders, even a lifting of weight off the chest. It doesn't start that way in therapy-informed financial planning. Couples just like you feel hurt, misunderstood, and experience resentment about some part of their financial life. There are many reasons why. It can be differences in spending patterns, concerns about emotional connection, shutdowns and blow-ups about changing homes, vacations, kids' education, and so much more. Maybe there's even that unaddressed tax issue or a struggling business that you just don't know what to do with. Therapy-informed financial planning draws on the best practices from both the fields of therapy and financial planning to help couples go from feeling stuck and frustrated to safe and free. Check the show notes below to schedule your free 30-minute consultation to learn how therapy-informed financial planning can help you. I look forward to talking with you soon, Ed. Now back to the show. Well, I think there's so many valuable points that you're hitting on that are standing out to me, Janine, is one, you know, I think that there's a lot of people that just in general feel overwhelmed and disempowered by large financial institutions and financial, it just feels daunting, like a foreign world that is scary and dangerous and greedy. And it's like, there's just a large number of people that are like, I can't even think about it because it's just too much. And so part of what I'm hearing from you is like the investment world doesn't have to be big, bad, scary, and like the big, bad wolf, right? Are there some big, bad wolves out there? Yes. But are there some really great golden retrievers? I don't know. I'm a fan of golden retrievers, but yeah. You know, this is not to be flip about picking your investments and just la-di-da, but there are ways of engaging the investment world that feel values aligned, that feel safe to approach, that are understandable, especially when you get with a knowledgeable and competent professional, then that can help you translate the information that doesn't yet make sense. Mm-hmm. But I think there's also that information flow that just doesn't hit social media very well and doesn't hit the 5 o'clock news. But the amount of capital that's available to women and minority individuals is so tiny.
Oh my gosh.
And yet they're such a huge part of our population and community and have so much to offer. And so why wouldn't we want to make sure capital is spread across our whole community and leveraged?
Yeah. Well, you just said so many things there, right? So yes, yes, and yes. I mean, in terms of first thing that comes to mind, in terms of financial advisors, there are financial advisors out there who are specifically focused on helping people invest this way. And there are even some in the FinCon community who are doing values aligned financial advising for their clients. So I think that's really important. The other thing you talked about was the dearth of money that goes to women and minorities. This is actually one of the reasons that I got involved in private investing in the first place and became an angel investor. So of all the venture capital money that was invested in 2022, I don't know the 2023 numbers yet, only about 2.3, 2.4 went to female CEOs. That's it. 2.3 or 2.4. And if you want to look at, you know, racially diverse leaders, it's bad. If you look at a racially diverse woman, it's less than 1% went to her. So one of the things that's starting to happen is more women are stepping up and starting to invest in women, and more people of color are starting to step up and invest in people of color because it has not happened before. And so I think that's really an important thing to realize. The other thing you talked about was, you know, that some people just feel overwhelmed and they don't even want to deal with this world of finance the way it's been presented to us. And I know folks who are not. They have made conscious decisions not to invest in the stock market at all.
Right.
They are doing everything differently. They are doing things, they're investing in private deals through things they know. They're just approaching this completely differently. And one of the tools they're using is something called an SDIRA, which only about, it's a retirement fund type of retirement account. It stands for self-directed IRA.
Yep.
Tiny percentage of people in the country actually use them. I think it's about 4 or 5%. But what they allow is they allow you to use your entire retirement money to invest in virtually anything you want. Private deals, real estate, land, water, you name it. As long as you don't break certain rules, which are really important not to break, or you can totally lose your money to the government. But the rules have a lot to do with self-serving or self-dealing. So you can't, for example, use your SDIRA to go buy yourself a second vacation home and then go hang out in that home. But you could use it to buy a rental income or something like that that does not serve you or any of your family members. So you really need to know the rules before you do this kind of thing. But there are alternatives out there for people who are seeking them. And there's an organization called the Next Egg that helps people who want to go on this very alternative path to investing.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things we haven't yet talked about it in this interview, but in past conversations, we've talked about the spiritual journey and the spiritual side of things. And I think, you know, there's a book that I read, I'm kind of missing it. It's called The Seven Story Mountain, I think. And it's by a mistake. Anyhow, the principle that I'm drawing on is we can get so stuck that there's one way up this wealth mountain. And like, just like in religion and in money, we get so locked into like, this is the philosophy. This is the way that you have to create wealth. This is the way you have to worship. This is the way you have to honor God, that we miss that there's actually many different ways to honor the divine. Yeah. There's many different ways to honor wealth, to accumulate wealth, to build wealth. And that part of our responsibility as humans is to become reflective and questioning about our particular belief system about wealth and our path up the mountain. And this is where I see a lot of clients that I work with get very stuck, is they start up this wealth mountain thinking this is the path that they should be on, and they're trying to make the most out of it. And they get partway up and they realize this actually doesn't feel good. This doesn't feel right. This is too confusing. This doesn't work with my level of risk. And so they kind of just stop on the side of the mountain, and they're kind of just frozen. And sometimes they're taking a tumble back down the wealth mountain metaphorically. And so, you know, this is why I think this conversation is also so important is, hey, there's other paths to get up the mountain. There's other ways to get unfrozen from this journey of building wealth and building wealth in a way that feels ethical and right. Because, you know, there's so many conscientious people out there that are concerned about what's happening with capitalism that, to your point, they just take an all or nothing approach and say, well, capitalism and the stock market is just a terrible, corrupt place. So I'm just going to kind of avoid it. But they don't really look to create other ways of building sustainable wealth for themselves.
It's a really good point. I mean, I'm really glad you brought the spiritual up in that. And you're right about, you know, the many different paths. I've studied a lot of spiritual traditions, and Hinduism, for example, talks about four different paths. You know, there's the path of the heart, there's the path of service, there's the path of the head. I forget the fourth path, but you know, so there are many different paths. And I think, you know, even in thinking about capitalism, I am not an anti-capitalist, but I am an anti the way we practice capitalism now person. So I think it's also important to remember that this whole belief around, you know, all that matters is the shareholder and everything will be perfect and the world will work great as long as we're maximizing return for the shareholder. That is only a 70-year-old idea that was sort of put upon us by Milton Friedman, who says he's right. I actually think the last 70 years have just suggested that he is dead wrong. I mean, if you look at the income inequity that exists in this country right now as a result of that kind of thinking and those kinds of policies, we are at one of the worst points in this country financially and politically that I've ever experienced in my almost 70 years of life. And I think that some of the way we think about capitalism is a part of that. There is a way to do capitalism that is much more generative, much more aligned with what it started out to be. I mean, business started out as a social contract between people. Right. It's about people. It was a way to provide us with better services and a way for us to get the things we need. It doesn't have to be practiced the way we practice it now. And particularly for people who have a religious following or who have strong spiritual beliefs, I really ask how money is an extension of ourselves, is so deeply integrated to who we are and how we show up in the world and what we do. It's like, as a religious person, how can you be putting your money to work in things that actually go against the rest of your values and the rest of your life and the rest of how you want to show up in the world? That's not integrity.
That's so powerful. And I think that that's a big part of that. You know, the academic, the head part of me thinks about kind of religious, spiritual, moral development. And there's such a great body of knowledge and literature about that journey that people take. And I think that it's another place that we get stuck as humans and as adults, as we kind of grow up with some childhood understanding of how the world is ordered. And we accumulate bits and pieces as we go into adulthood. But where a lot of us get stuck is we never really have the time or take the time to become reflective about, well, how does this all work? And what does it actually mean to me? And that's a crisis journey for a lot of us to work through, because we have to loosen the hold on certain beliefs, maybe adopt new beliefs. And so it's a crisis of faith for a lot of folks. But man, if you're willing to dive into that and really take on that journey and have conversations with people that have questioned deeply, getting to the other side of it allows you to be in a place of greater alignment and wisdom and perspective. And this is for me a call to invite people into that journey that maybe you don't even know you need to take.
It's, you know, it's really true. I read somewhere that we as human beings tend to create our worldview when we're in our 20s. And in our 20s, we decide this is how the world works. This is my belief system. And some people, many people, unfortunately, as they go along in life and the world starts to change, they would rather throw out a fact or a truth than have to reevaluate and change their worldview. And I actually, somewhere along the line, and this is a little crazy, but somewhere along the line, I decided that this kind of inflexibility that many of us get into is why we die. Why this whole thing was set up with us dying. Because could you imagine what the world would look like if we all decided in our 20s what reality was, what truth was, what the worldview was, and we refused to ever change it? We would still be cavemen and women.
Oh,
you know, it's only when you're willing to break those barriers that you are able to continue to grow through your life and to live a rich, resilient, exploratory life, even until your oldest, the day that you die. I mean, I think it's hard. I think it gets harder as you get older.
Right.
But I plan to live to be 100.
Yeah.
And I hope that I am able to keep breaking that barrier around what is true and what I believe and the way the world works until the day I die.
Oh, so if you're listening right now, I want to invite you to rewind about 3 minutes, because I don't know what time it was, but when Janine just started talking, and just listen to this again now, knowing what she's going to say, and let that settle in for you. That is an exercise, is just listen to that. Janine, you said that you're nearly 70 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And at 70, I hear the passion and the conviction around, I'm not anywhere close to being done on asking questions. I'm reading between the lines, but that's kind of what I'm hearing. Is that fair to say?
It is fair to say. I mean, I will tell you, I am looking at AI with both complete terror, apprehension, and, well, I can either just ignore this whole thing and just keep going on in my very way and not let it into my worldview.
Right.
Not
right.
Take this on.
Right.
Or I can start learning about this and getting more educated and begin to understand the implications it's going to have in the world and start to readjust my belief and my behavior and my reality with an acceptance of it's coming. So I want it, you know, so I am both apprehensive on the one hand and also realizing I'm going to just have to make the time and space to go learn about this and figure out how to step into this new world in a way that's enriching and hopefully helpful.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I think I'm coming to very similar conclusions about AI. Is it is not going anywhere. It's only advancing, and, you know, there will be great good that comes from it likely. And there will probably be some really big problems that come too. As most social innovations have neither all good or all bad. Right. That's the both and of it all.
This is where we come back to money.
Indeed.
Because we as investors have the opportunity and the choice to determine what does our money go to, right?
Yeah.
Like, think about where you bank. And think about what your bank does as an example, right? If you're invested in one of the big four banks, you don't know what the heck they're doing with your money at all.
Right.
They are probably spending it on the financial economy. They are spending it on growing shareholder wealth. They are doing all kinds of things globally with your money. But they sure the heck aren't doing much in your community. I moved all of my money out of all my cash, savings account, checking account, money market, everything out of those big financial institutions. And I put it in local community banks and credit unions that are actually serving the poor and the underserved people in my community. And I get emails from them sometime giving me specific examples of people who have been helped through the loans that they've provided. You know, a big part of all of this is, if enough of us start moving our money into things that matter to us more and toward the things we want to see in the world, like how do we put our money into AI so that AI does good and it's not just about maximizing return, which is kind of where it's headed right now. How do we help change that, that ship so that it's more conscious in the way that it's moving forward, right? It's going to have a huge impact on us. If enough of us start moving our money in these ways, we can literally change what matters. We can change what matters. We can change where the power is. We can change what the story is. because at the end of the day, this is always all about money. And so I think there's just enormous potential for all of us, even though it may feel like our own little amount of money isn't doing much, it matters to someone. The fact that my money is in my local banks matters to those underserved people and those female entrepreneurs who are getting money to take their businesses forward in my community. And I feel great about my money. I mean, I don't have all kinds of hangups about my money anymore. It's like, I feel great about what it's doing in the world. And every time I find a new thing to put my money into, I get super excited. For example, I just bought a CD, 15 month. I'm in the process of buying a CD. I'm moving some money out of a money market account that I have that's paying me virtually nothing. Yeah. Granted, it's in a values aligned institution, but it's not paying me enough. Yeah. So I'm moving that money to another bank. It's called Climate First Bank that is going to buy, I'm going to buy a 15 month CD, 5.3% return. And they, all their loans, everything they do is all about sustainable climate.
So, and let's just name the bank. Janine's not getting paid by the bank. I'm not getting paid by the bank. So this is not, you know, endorsed as Climate First Bank, but
it's not an endorsement.
It's just understanding that even these types of institutions exist out there, building your awareness, yes. Like, oh, I didn't even know this type of bank existed. So, you know, yes. Janine, you just have such a wealth of wisdom, but I think what I appreciate even more is your energy and passion and excitement for money. That gets contagious. It really gets me convicted to continue to look at and, you know, start making those adjustments. So if you're saying, well, God, I haven't even really begun on this. Well, let today be the first step. You've started thinking about it. If you've been thinking about it for a while, let this be the invitation to take that next step and get curious and move some of your money. You don't have to do all of this in one day or 1 week. This can be a multi-year journey where you evolve how your money is managed and where it's held. So don't feel any pressure from the two of us that, like, wagging the fingers, you got to hurry up and do all this, but just, you know, take a step. And Janine, in that vein, you have a book out called Activate Your Money. Can you tell listeners a little bit about the book, what it's about, what they'll get from it? Because I imagine it will support this whole conversation we've been having.
Yeah, absolutely. And I couldn't agree with you more about what you just said. I talk about investing being a marathon, not a sprint. It is something that you're going to do for life, right? And you get better at it all along the way. And don't make yourself wrong. Don't make yourself feel bad if you're not moving as fast as you should or could. I mean, when I took my money back 6 years ago, I'm still in my process. But when I took it back, I started to realize that anyone could invest this way. And I wanted to help other people not have as hard a time as I had, particularly women. And so I wrote Activate Your Money. Subtitle is Invest to Grow Your Wealth and Build a Better World, because I can believe we can do both.
Right.
And the intention was to help readers understand how to think about their investing across their entire portfolio and how to find values-aligned investments. So the book is split into three parts. The first part is sort of, this is what this kind of investing is. I wrote it for women. So there's a section on why this matters to women and why it's important for them. I did a little bit of Finance 101 in there to help people remember to look at, well, what do they currently own and how are they allocating their assets? Because that's a really important decision. The middle part is the bulk of the book, and it goes literally asset class by asset class, starting with your cash, looking at cash alternatives, fixed income, public stock, private investing alternatives, and philanthropy. Looks at all of those, a chapter or two on each, and talks about this is how this asset class works. This is where you can find values aligned investments in this asset class. So I actually give actual examples. Every chapter ends with a take action section, and there is a companion website, activateyourmoney.net, that has all these free tools that you can download to take the action. So there's spreadsheets, there are templates, there are letters, there are forms, there's all kinds of stuff for free on my website to help you go on this journey. And then the last part of the book focuses on things like your retirement accounts. It talks about SDIRAs, which we referenced earlier. It talks about how to get your employer to start allowing you to have values-aligned investments in your 401ks or employee-based stock funds. It talks about how to find a values-aligned investor, and then it talks about how to come together in groups to learn together. And then again, that's what we started doing. So as I was writing the book, I met a woman based in Boston who was putting women into investment clubs to teach them these kinds of things. And she and I joined forces in September of 2021 and used my book as a guide and have developed a pretty comprehensive curriculum to put women together in clubs to teach them these values and to teach them how to invest this way.
Wow, so powerful. So Janine, as we wrap up this conversation, how can people find you, connect with the work that you're doing?
They can get my book, Activate Your Money. You can find it anywhere at a bookseller's online. They can email me. I'm happy to talk to anyone. My email address is jfirpo, that's J, F as in Frank, I, R, P as in Peter, O, at investforbetter.org. And you can also check out Invest for Better online and learn more about our organization and how we're educating women.
So powerful. Thank you so much for your time today, your energy and passion around this topic. And I know we'll be revisiting this conversation again on the podcast with you.
Well, thank you, Ed, for a really enjoyable and interesting conversation.
I invite you now to stop for 5 or 10 minutes and reflect on what you just heard. Maybe even journal about it. Give yourself the time to consider what you just heard and what it means to you. By giving yourself the time to reflect and integrate what you just heard, it will help you along your journey of learning, healing, and growing towards financial intimacy in your life. Please like and follow this podcast and share it with someone that would benefit from being on the journey of financial intimacy. Wishing you healthy love and money, Ed.